This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you, Chris?
Ill in lockdown.
Well, it does feel that way. Well, as we're recording this, the UK isn't quite at lockdown. We're still waiting the output of the Cobra Cabinet meeting, but I get the feeling we all feel that we're going to head that way fairly soon.
It's all about beer, isn't it? Cobra, Corona.
Corona, yeah.
Well, that's about two beers. I can't think of any other. I was hoping there might be more than two examples, but I can't think of anything else.
No, it's not. But beer will make it all right anyway.
It certainly will. Not that I have one at the moment because it's far too early in the day, but there you go. Yeah, so as we stand today, as a time slot, recording time slot piece of information, we can still fly to America.
We can indeed.
Our friends in Europe cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, okay. Now, it is just you and me today because everybody else is quarantined, lockdown, not available, whatever. But I thought it would be good to go back and look at something that's been on my mind for a little while. And this is relating to file systems. We'll come on to exactly what we mean by file systems in a minute. But the reason this one sort of came up is because I've seen a lot of new file systems come along, at least what I thought were new file systems, but may or may not be new file systems. And it made me sort of question, why are we seeing so many? Why do we need so many? And is there a justification for why they keep coming out and why people keep writing them? Or is it a case of this is just people's science projects? And I thought it might be good to sort of dig down into what we know as a file system, what we see out there, and exactly why it might be useful to consider what alternatives to what you normally use. So that's our topic for today.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting topic, Chris. I mean, I think 4 or 5 years ago, there wasn't quite this proliferation of file systems. It does feel like we are seeing a large number of file systems are popping up now.
And traditionally, I would say, Martin, that a lot of the ones that we think of today have been around for a long time as well. I mean, that's another side to it, isn't it?
So Very much so.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get into that. But let's start by talking about what a file system is. Now, the most obvious definition I guess, is that a file system is there on a server or a computer or even your desktop or anywhere, really to give structure to the raw storage that you've got available for storing persistent data. So you've got to in some way store files, objects, whatever it happens to be, in some sort of structured format, and the file system is that thing. So, for example, in your laptop, you would format the hard drive with a file system on top. Server, you'd do something similar. So it's initially adding us that structure, isn't it?
Yeah, it's basically so you can find the stuff you put on that raw disk.
Yes, exactly. And obviously, we can add other things into that because obviously a file system gives you more. It gives you things like security through ACLs. It potentially might give you some sort of data protection through snapshots and so on. And probably more importantly than those two, and really very important, if you're building out something on your desktop or a server or something like that, is that it will add things like journaling and fault tolerance. So that if your machine crashes or is powered off, hopefully when you bring the machine back on, you can go through a file system check and get back to your data. So it's actually pretty important to the operation of any computing system.
Yeah, and they've been around for a long time. And as you said, we're adding features to them all the time, from data protection, journaling, snapshots, all kinds of things are now built into file systems. At one point, if we take it right back to the early days, a file system was just there to store your data and let you get access to it in some way.
Now, we also have distributed file systems. The first step there was to talk about file systems in general, but file systems might well just be on your machine and literally only accessible and mounted to your operating system, your laptop or your desktop or your server or whatever. But obviously, we also have distributed file systems, which, and I'm separating this, by the way, from NFS and SMB for a moment. We'll come back to that in a second. But you potentially can have distributed file systems that allow you to deploy your data across many nodes at the same time and theoretically access them all at the same time.
Yeah, so there are lots of distributed file systems. The one I'm most familiar with is a GPFS, Spectrum Scale. There are lots of other distributed file systems, things like Gluster, Ceph. A large number of them, and yet what it does allows you to have multiple servers accessing the same piece of data.
Yes. So if we imagine that we've got multiple nodes who need to access the same data for compute purposes, then that would be one sort of architecture that we might use it for. We might want to scale out our capacity. So by adding multiple nodes into an environment, we could potentially build out a scale-out file system. We might do that for resiliency, so that if a node fails or crashes, we've got the ability to bring it or keep it running consistently. And also, when we look at, and I'm mixing it slightly here, so I'll be careful, but when you look at some of the technology that's that underlies object stores, certainly with file systems, we can also do some sort of geodistribution. So we can actually spread that data across distance, although that's quite a challenge to do, but we can do it if we want to. But those sort of systems are not without their challenges, are they, in terms of things like split brain, performance, consistency? There's a lot of challenges to delivering a distributed file system effectively.
Yes, I suppose we're almost using the terms distributed file system as a synonym for cluster file system.
Yes, good point. And it's very difficult to make sure you use the right terms, because sometimes distributed and clustered, you could interchange, but you're not necessarily talking about the same thing there all the time. No. You have to be a bit careful about that. But yes, you're right. Would you say there's a difference between a parallel file system and a clustered file system?
I'm sure there is one, but when I tend to talk about them, I tend to use the terms interchangeably.
Yeah, I think I do too, but I was wondering whether I would treat a parallel file system as possibly one that's more suited to managing parallel access across multiple nodes all at the same time, more effectively than one that hasn't been designed for that, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. I think it'll probably come down to how you lock.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, locking files for access to read and write. And
that's one of the things, just to finish that bit off before we move on, that I think is one of the biggest challenges there, is that if you're accessing data across multiple nodes, you somehow have to manage a locking process so that if two people go for the same piece of data at the same time across different nodes, that you're locking access to that. And that's a challenge, obviously, when we look at things like NFS and SMB, but I don't necessarily want to go and talk about network file systems as part of this discussion, but obviously we do have network file systems which expose a file system to a client across the network, SMB and NFS being the two most obvious ones.
Well, you can make an argument that SMB and NFS are almost virtual file systems, because they always overlay on top of an existing file system.
Yes, that's true. It's effectively a protocol that's exposing that data to the outside world in some form. Yeah,
yeah,
good point. So first question then, why have we got different file systems types? Why have we got different ones in the market?
Why have we got different operating systems in the market? Different file systems are good for different things, and people like different things. Everybody thinks they can do it better, Chris.
Yes, true. So I made a little list here, at least I started to make a list and think, you know, what's out there and what exists. So if you look at, say, Microsoft, and this is going back quite a long way, there we had FAT originally, the file allocation table. But when we had NT come in, we had NTFS, and recently we've had the resilient file system from Microsoft. Although I've only done a little bit with that, I haven't done a lot. This was to try and add more resiliency to NTFS. But then there are other file systems like ext3, ext4, which run on Linux, and a whole host of different ones. So you're right, there's different file systems for different reasons. And I listed down there, vendor proprietary is one, platform specific is another. And of course, some of these just have evolved, haven't they, over time?
Yeah, they have. I mean, we can push it right back. I mean, we get the term file system from the fact that that's how you used to store files, in a filing system.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
And then if you think about how you could put a file system on tape. In fact, we do to a certain extent.
Yes. Well, I didn't directly intend to talk too much about LTFS, but
I'm just thinking about the LTO standard itself. You start writing stuff to it. There is a there's descriptions at the top, at the front, that tells you where things are.
Mm-hmm.
After, and then you wind things backwards and forwards.
True.
So there is a file system as such, or you might actually have your file system maybe abstracted out of completely out of it. You could actually say it's just a database telling me where my files are.
Yeah, so we've seen various different evolutions of file systems over time, and I mentioned very briefly the NTFS and the resilient file system from Microsoft. But even within FAT, there were versions of FAT, wasn't there? So if you remember, yeah. I think we had FAT 12 or 16 and 32. And that was all to cope with the fact that drive sizes just increased, and the metadata that stored the files just wasn't enough, or wasn't capable enough to address enough of the space on the disk to take full use of it.
Right, so you have FAT12, FAT16, FAT32,
and I think FAT stopped at that point, did it?
FAT32 is the last one, and it's just got a file size limit of about, I think it was about 4 gigs. I seem to remember. Which is not so good. One point that seemed like an awful lot, but these days it's not a big file.
And then you had XFAT, which I can't exactly remember what that one did, but I think that was an extension.
Didn't XFAT allow you to have proper names? So you can have extended names. So underneath it, there was still the 8.3 naming standard for,
good point.
On the XFAT, you could have extended names.
Yeah, long names. And there's a good example of the sort of improvements and changes we see in file systems over time. So, you know, whether it's the ability to support longer file names, whether it's the ability to give you better resiliency, so if the file system or the server crashes, it comes back up cleaner. It might even be performance. I'll come on and talk about one of those in a moment. But ultimately, bit by bit, we've, in general, seen file systems evolve simply because we've had either improvements in technology, bigger hard drives, faster media like Flash, or even file systems that need to understand how to manage for things like Flash. So there's been lots of improvements that have literally just been evolutionary ones that have had to be in there as part of the fact that, you know, computing's improved over the years.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest drivers in file system development is just the increase in size of storage medium. If you take it back to a floppy was a flat file system with no folders, the original. And so then eventually directories came in. It's something which you might want to do. And then it was all about, then we ended up with much more descriptive file names. It's all to do with the sheer amount of data we have and how we manage it these days.
Yeah, so here's an interesting one. So have you heard of, I think it's ZUFS, Z-U-F-S. Have you heard of that one?
No, doesn't ring any bells.
So when NetApp acquired PlexiStore in 2017, they translated that solution into something called MaxData. So MaxData is a technology that uses storage class memory, persistent memory in your server, presents a local file system, and backs that file system off to a backing store that's on a standard NetApp box.
Okay.
What that means is you get super high performance from a local file system in the server, but you get a certain degree of resiliency by backing that off to the NetApp platform. So it's effectively putting a file system under SCM. Now, if you look at that one as an example, we know that in general, when you write to a block device, we write and read in blocks of, you know, half a K, 4K, whatever that happens to be. With storage class memory, you can read and write at the byte level. So you've got a totally different way of managing your file system if you're writing at the byte level rather than at the block level. So they created a completely new file system, and it stands for something like zero copy user space file system or something like that.
Okay.
So and I think it's a piece of open source, and I think it's going to be in the Linux kernel at some point. But it's a good example of technology where if you're writing to a specific media type, it has a requirement, or there's an option there to develop something very specific for that particular media.
Arguably, so it's used to provide a file system on SCM or PMEM devices, I guess.
Yes, exactly that. So what about, from your perspective, what about data type specific file systems? I mean, you mentioned your experience with GPFS. What was so good about that that allowed or made it suitable for the type of workloads you might have been working on at the time?
A, because it's a distributed file system, which means we could make it very large. You could tune it to in a much more sophisticated way than you could, a Windows file system or a traditional EXT 3 or 4 file system. So you could actually tune it to make sure that it could cater with large files. You can change things around. But mostly it's about the ability to build a file system which is distributed and which can be accessed by many compute nodes at the same time. That's why you do it.
Okay, that classic parallel file system we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to add one other in there in this example, and that's, I'm going to add two vendor proprietary ones. We've had Weka.io, now called just Weka, the company.
Yeah.
They've got a file system called Matrix, which basically distributes the file system across multiple nodes and uses specifically NVMe storage.
Yeah.
But is entirely proprietary. So, funny enough, I think even on the discussions we've had with Liren, the CEO, he's been very reticent to talk to about any of the detail about how they do some of their technology because it's very proprietary, and that proprietary and patented techniques they've got within there allow them to get that level of performance. So, clearly there's value to writing a file system that's super high performance.
Yeah.
That's one. The second one is, of course, VMware, VMFS.
Yeah.
And the VMware file system that formats raw storage up into a format that can be then used to mount virtual machines. Why is that one? Well, why does that one exist? And it's pretty straightforward. Because there are certain functions, there are certain commands you want to run against virtual machines that if you're on the file system, you can do more efficiently.
Yeah.
So that's all good, but I just want to cover one or two other things off first. And the first one is POSIX, because everybody talks about POSIX. And everybody says, oh, POSIX compatible file system. But what does it actually mean?
POSIX defines a number of functions which you can do with a file system. And it defines some standards in the way you would interact. So obviously you can read, write, create, delete, and amend files. So it gives you a common API, basically.
Yes. So from the client end, it gives you a standard API that says when you do things like, as you said, open, close, read, write, when you do a lookup on a file, when you look at metadata, and when you do any sort of function, it's not really relevant how that function is delivered by the file system. All you should expect is somebody writing software that interacts with the file system, reads and writes files on disks, is that you get a standard way of interacting. And obviously that gives some vendors the ability to do something a bit cleverer. So they could build a file system that runs entirely in memory for sake of argument. You could write one that's very good on metadata. Or you could build a completely false virtual file system that runs in memory and just doesn't really have any data to back it, or the data is somewhere else. So, you know, for instance, you could write a local file system and the data could be in the cloud. But all perfectly possible. But POSIX gives you that standard, doesn't it?
Yeah, we do have a habit of talking about POSIX as if it's only to do with file systems. It's not only to do with file systems. It's actually how do you interface with an operating system, full stop. But for all intents and purposes, most of the time when you're talking about POSIX, people talk about file systems.
Yes, absolutely. And one final thing, let's just tidy some of it up a little bit. A lot of the file systems that are out there are quite native. Not only they're proprietary, but they also are native to certain platforms. So we certainly see NTFS is native to Windows. You don't really see NTFS anywhere else. ext3, 4, that's definitely a Linux thing. And let's call it ZFS or ZFS, depending on which way you like to pronounce it. That came from Sun. But we're starting to see that one in other places, and that's sort of started to be adopted in other areas. But that's another one that's, I think, relatively proprietary, shall we say.
Well, yeah, so ZFS or ZFS, it certainly turns up in a Sun world, but also the BSD offshoots, I believe, actually use it quite a lot.
And originally it was used in the IntelliFlash platforms from Tedjar, which became Western Digital.
They so that was basis, based on yeah. Was it based on OpenZFS as opposed to the?
I think it was based. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
But okay. Let's not dig into ZFS too much because there is a controversial history.
Yes, we don't really need to go into the detail of that one today. But why are these sort of things hard? Why are they seen as hard to do? And why do we typically not see thousands of file systems out there? Why do people always say, "Oh, file systems are hard. It takes a long time to develop one from scratch." What do they mean by that?
Because they have to be bulletproof. You're writing your data to it. If you write your data to it, if it doesn't do it in a consistent manner, you end up with corruption. It's the one piece of an operating system which really needs to be bulletproof, I would say.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, everything requires persistent storage. And persistent storage that's 100% reliable. Mm. So you really just cannot afford to lose people's data. I think the other thing to bear in mind there is that, in general, file systems need to be built into the kernel to operate because they are effectively accepting and managing privilege calls that you're doing at the time, you know, when you're opening and closing files. And with the exception of, say, Fuse, which, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know, is an acronym for file system in user space, which is basically a technique that allows you to use a standard set of calls that are POSIX supported. But actually, you can write your own code to deliver that file system, and your code lives in user space and not in the kernel. And it means that it's much easier to debug, much easier to fix problems that come up with it. Whereas if you're writing in the kernel and you get kernel panic, your whole machine goes down. So I think it's a combination of, as you said, Martin, reliability, and the fact that you're having to develop something that's mostly in the kernel, which is hard to debug and hard to do.
Yeah, so I think one of the reasons we've actually seen a proliferation of file systems has been the emergence of Fuse under Linux and now under Windows. So it allows people a lot easier way to experiment with different file systems.
It does. I must admit, I've spent quite a lot of time with Fuse and found it really interesting and quite good fun to mess about and work out how you could do things. So I wrote one Fuse environment that was purely in memory. I wrote another one where I could change the security ACLs on the fly, which was quite fun. So when you went and did a list of the file system, all the ownership. You could just change at the drop of a hat because it's all just a POSIX call. You know, you call for something and you return the data. So you can deliver it any way you like. So it's really interesting to see what you could do with Fuse and those sort of technologies. And that brings us on to discuss all the other file systems that we're seeing out there. And this is where I think this initial discussion came from. And I don't know whether you remember, I think it might have been Cloud Expo a couple of years ago, one of those sort of events in London.
Yeah.
We came across something called Moose FS.
I do remember that.
Literally like a moose, as in, you know, Canadian big deer or whatever. I don't know what family they belong to, reindeer, I suppose. And I was surprised by there was that. And then there was another one called Lizard FS, and I've heard of something called Roseau FS, and there's Hydra FS, BG FS. And one, I'm still struggling to decide how I pronounce it, and that's Chabao or Chabao FS. How do you reckon you pronounce that one?
Chabao, I would have thought, because Chabao is like a bao bun, so I would have think Cha. I'm wondering if that's just going to be a phonetic translation from the Chinese name, because it's developed in China.
Right.
Or it could be Zabal or something like that, but it's certainly Bao.
Okay. So why so many? I mean, what are these different file systems giving us?
I really wish I knew why we are seeing so many proliferation. I think it's because it's an interesting area for people to experiment with. I think the explosion in data and the explosion of data types, people are looking at different ways, and we're moving away from a general purpose file system in general. So people are starting to think, how do I handle billions of tiny files out of my Internet of Things? How do I process that? So you have very small files. My files streaming in from these systems, so you need to work out how you're going to write them quickly enough. And then you'll have the very large files, the files which I tend to deal with in my day-to-day, the UHD, the HD files, and now, so which are many gigabytes, terabytes in cases of files. So we're getting to the stage, certainly in niche computing, but we need something which is different to what we've seen in the past.
So we could, I mean, I didn't include it in this, but you could look at something like the Hadoop file system. And I didn't put that in here as another file system, but in some respects it is. And it was developed, like you said, for a very specific purpose related to the processing of data. So although I didn't find a lot of information about the differentiation between all the different file systems I've just mentioned, most of them seem to be quite technical, below the line technical related to reliability and so on. I think you're right. Things like IoT and other solutions that are generating certain data profiles probably have certain requirements when they're actually reading or writing that data, especially with different data types.
Changing your file system, actually doing some of things which we might traditionally do at the hardware level, actually makes a file system more flexible. You can do your fault tolerance at the file system level as opposed to down at the hardware level. That means for particular file types, you could actually specify an enhanced protection. So you could say, actually, I don't mind that one being a RAID 4, or I don't mind that being a RAID 5, but that I want to be RAID 6. I want it spread across many nodes. I want it as protected as possible. So by bringing some of these functions up into the file system, it allows us to improve how we protect our data.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And being able to be very specific about that, that could lead to, you know, as you said, the ability to protect individual files on a specific basis in terms of protection, or even build in snapshotting around a certain file type or something like that. That seems to me like to be a really interesting direction for it to go. And I think I'd like to see more in terms of the functionality improving to me, the user, rather than just being about, oh, we wrote a better file system that works better with Flash than the one that you saw last week. Because ultimately, every file system could be modified or tuned for that sort of technology over time. But really, if I'm a user, I want to see something that's going to give me some more, you know, front-end functionality that's useful to me.
Yeah, so we see things like tiering built into file systems, which is an interesting thing to do. So but tiering as it gets written, so you can actually look at a piece of data as it starts to come in and say, okay, that has that attribute, I shall write that to Flash. Oh, that's got that attribute, that goes to a slower Flash or to traditional disk. So this is where we're beginning to see some of the features come in.
So let's expand that slightly, because as we talk about those sort of features, you could look at, say, technology like HCI. So when Nutanix brought in their HCI platform, we talked about them just the other week. We talked about the ability to scale a file system across multiple nodes in order to remove the SAN, there's an option at that point to say, well, because I know this is a certain type of data, I can do something with it. And maybe I can deliver an interface that allows me to have a stream of changed data from the file system rather than have to copy an entire file. Maybe I could do it at a block level or something like that. So maybe I can open up APIs into my file system that allow me to do other useful things. Another example was, if you remember, Tintree had a lot of very good technology built into their platform. Now, if that was built into the file system, you could perhaps tune the file system for certain components of a VM, so those components got faster response than others or something like that. So there's an amazing number of things you could do with a file system if you really wanted to.
Oh yeah, and we have to remember that actually in many cases what we think as a file system is actually overlaid on top of another file system. So yeah, NetApp was the classic one for that, way back in the day.
So, everybody said Waffle. Waffle wasn't the file system.
Okay, so it had aspects of a file system. It was a proto file system. But we do know that other storage devices out there are doing things with file systems. That's how they're abstracting the data.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and so, I agree with you. I think Waffle was sort of a file system. It was certainly a standard that allowed you to store structured data, at least, wasn't it?
Yeah. I can understand why NetApp got upset about it, because people used it to denigrate the performance of their devices. I actually think they were quite smart.
Yes, absolutely, definitely. So that all sounds great, but when we've talked a lot about what those file systems are, many of them are open source. Many of them are out there in the community being developed by people, not necessarily for fun, partly for fun, but also because, I guess, they're trying to promote things as open source rather than proprietary. But what happens when the developers get bored, or, who's maintaining this stuff, and how fast can you really get a response when something fails? That to me seems to be my risk point with all of this.
Yeah, I can understand that, but that's the situation of open source, any open source software. So if you're going to use open source software in production, you take the risk, but you have two options. You take a risk and you rely on community support, and actually often the community support is very, very good. Otherwise, you would take your support from a large vendor, say Red Hat, for instance. So you and Red Hat would have a number of file systems within within RHEL, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, which they support, and they're willing to work with you. And that's what you do. So as soon as you go off piste, and actually a lot of the open source file systems, they have a professional edition, or they have a support model. So you could license it and you could pay support then. Or as long as you know who the developers are, and if you can just offer to pay them.
Yeah.
So if suddenly your file system's gone down, you've got ridiculous corruption, you end up paying the developer potentially.
Yeah, sometimes it's just, even if it is open source, it's well worth having somebody who offers support at some point.
Obviously, there's something else which you should always do.
Back up your data. Whoa, ticking the box for me for getting it right.
Yeah.
But no, that's true. I mean, at the end of the day, everything fails. Software fails in every place, one way or another. And, we know many storage vendors have had many issues with their products, and occasionally there has been data loss. So you can't get away from the fact that you have to back up.
Yeah, you back it up. That's how you protect yourself. And if you're playing with one of a new file system, and have very good reasons too, because some of them had some really interesting features, various ways of accessing, not just POSIX file systems, but some may allow you to access your files via an S3 interface, for instance. So you get options of how you access things.
Yeah.
So you'd experiment with them, you'd try and prove them, you try and push them to the edge cases. But as soon as you put it in production, you've got to back it up.
Yes, good point. Okay, so should we all be thinking about this as an option if we're developing solutions, thinking that there might be a good file system we should use for our data type? And how should we compare them? And is it going to come back to what we just said, a case of actually looking to see what they offer and see whether they offer the things that you're trying to resolve as a problem?
Most people probably don't need to worry about looking at their file system. One of the traditional file systems would be absolutely fine. Be NTFS, X4 these days in Linux, XFS potentially in Linux as well. So for most people, should you be very interested in the file system? Probably not, unless you're a bit of a geek like us. But as soon as you start going, to the cases where you might be looking for very large file systems or dealing with millions or billions of small files, you have to start making some decisions, and you're going to go much more off-piste. You're going to be starting looking at something which is a bit more niche and a bit more specialized.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, sounds good. I mean, at the end of the day, I think this area is really interesting. And I'm always curious to see what people are doing with this sort of thing, because it is the area where we have to be thinking about the value of our data. And, everything spans from the ability to read files when we boot up a machine. So I just think this area is really interesting, and one we should perhaps come back to if we find anybody who's prepared to talk about it.
Yeah, but it would be. We've spoken to Weka in the past, so anybody who wants to come and talk to us about file systems and what they're doing and why their file system is different, why it's great, I think we'd all be very happy to talk to them.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. On that note, Martin, I'll say thanks very much and catch up with you next time.
Cool. Cheers, Chris.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked, or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.